in this society, I mean, we are living in what is essentially an illegally occupied country. And so there's not many ways that we can actively exercise what we might believe freedom to mean.
You're listening to All the Best on FBI Radio. I'm Samantha Groth. This week, you're going to meet four generations of one family because we're bringing you the untold story of their legacy. This family helped create Radio Redfern, the Black Theatre, the first black newspaper in Australia, the Brisbane Indigenous Media Association, and the Murray School, which is an independent Aboriginal and Islander community school. It kicks off with the matriarch, Maureen Watson, her younger brother, Ross Watson, Maureen's son, Tiger, Ross's daughter, Taylor, and Tiger's daughter, Caillou, both musicians and performers. Then you'll meet Caillou's son, Tiger Bales Jr. Tiger works with his mum, creating audio documentaries, like this one. And finally, teenage Lala Bales, another of Tiger's grandchildren. She's a powerful force, already speaking up for the cause and sharing her poetry at rallies and community events. One family of activists, poets, storytellers, actors, humanitarians, and educators. The future looks bright, and this is their story. A caution for First Nation listeners, please be advised the following documentary contains voices of people who have passed.
What makes a good ancestor?
Well, you know, that's the ones who are recognised. But I mean, just the fact that if you, like we say at our birthday parties, there's such a big mob of us, we have one birthday party a month and everybody brings their cake and whatever for that month, whoever's got a birthday. There's over 100 of us, so you'd be going to birthday parties all the time.
That's a lot of cake.
And yeah, I reckon, especially if you're trying to lose weight. And what sometimes in the talk that's made at the birthdays is we wish them the wisdom and the strength and the ability to live out their destiny with honour, that they may have their elders and their youngsters hold their heads up when their name is mentioned. The wonderful thing about this is that when people say, look, I'm only one person, I can't change the world. But in this instance, you are the only one who has the power. And we may not have a statue in the park, you know, we mightn't have rivers or mountains or shopping centres or cities named after us, but we have that inner peace and that sense of satisfaction, of knowledge, that we are worthy and honourable people, and that our children and our children's children can feel good when they mention our name.
Growing up with Gran, Maureen Watson, I heard her telling stories at schools, universities, festivals, gatherings and events all over the country. Gran travelled the world a few times over, sharing her wisdom and the wisdom of our ancestors. She used storytelling, acting, activism, public appearances, humanitarian teachings, media interviews and articles, poetry and children's activities with Aboriginal themes. So it's not surprising we have so many gifted storytellers in the family, and I'm sure there'll be more of us in the future too. My name's Caillou Bales, the granddaughter of Maureen Watson, who you just heard, and the daughter of Tiger Bales, who you'll also hear. So far in the family, we've got four generations of storytellers. The Bales-Watson mob, been articulating this country's story from a black perspective for decades. As Dr. Gregory Phillips states,
the role of Aboriginal people, in fact, is actually to liberate not just ourselves, but to liberate others from these oppressive values of greed and fear of the other, because they are the things that are running the whole human race into the ground.
Storytelling in all its forms is a powerful tool we can use to continue the efforts of those before us. So here, we tell the stories of the storytellers.
I like to tell the one about when I was realising that I was not finding the fulfilment I was looking for as a wife and a mother and a homemaker. And as my husband would say to me sometimes, "What's wrong with you? Other women are happy with their home and their husband and their Hoover. What's wrong with you?" And in the dead of the night, tossing and turning, and I'd say to myself, "What is wrong with me? Other women are happy with their home and their Hoover and their husbands. What's wrong with me?" And I see other women out there now asking those same questions and filling with self-doubt and looking at their reflections and asking the same questions. What's wrong with me? Well, there ain't nothing wrong with you, sister girl. And there ain't nothing wrong with the man who stands beside you. The only thing wrong is that we're so busy trying to live out somebody else's expectations, somebody else's reality. And we can't do that, not with any sort of legitimacy. We've got to make our own reality. We talk about various things that have happened to me in my lifetime. How I grew up out bush, how our dad taught us the different things like how to find the scrub turkey's eggs and when to go looking for the dingo pups. He made us our fishing spear to go fishing in the creeks. And then when I left school, I was working as a tractor driver and a stockwoman and a dingo trapper, kangaroo shooter, cattle driver.
Granny Maureen's brother, Ross Watson, also uses the art of storytelling to communicate urgent global issues and raise consciousness levels to align ourselves better with the environment around us. His PhD work, The River Story, will soon be published. The catalyst for the river story was the ongoing global environment crisis of global warming, poverty, and failure to address these issues and build a better future for the future generations. Through this platform, we hope to communicate with like-minded people to develop projects that redress the global warming crisis and engage in activities that heal the planet.
Yeah, well, I've got a boy, he's talking about the concept of a consensus political party that would function on goodwill. And what people agree on, not what they disagree on, but what people agree on. And we'll find most of us agree that we want our children to have clean air and water. Most people would agree we don't want poverty.
We'd like to have our women and children walk safely wherever they go.
In a consensus type of society like we had, there's no need for a police force. You only need a police force in a corrupt society where the elements of humanness have been subverted. Where they've been corrupted, that's the only place you need a police force. Otherwise, there's no reason for them because everybody's... It's like the seats on a plane. You get this seat, that seat, that seat. You've got a role to carry out in that society to look after country, to look after the people who live in that country. And those roles give people... You don't need a police force for that sort of society. The system doesn't pose an idle threat. They can remove people. And they do not want us to talk about duty of care to the children and duty of care to the environment. And I think this word, we're not just talking about blackfellas and our sovereignty or our rights. We're talking about a much bigger issue. And the challenge, of course, for people is not to compete, it's not to fight, it's not to win or lose. The challenge for people is to get along, is to find the common things we agree on and to be able together in congenial goodwill. That's the challenge for people.
Tiger Bell Sr., Maureen's son, many will know from his powerful speaking voice, tireless fighting and campaigning for land rights and a better future for his people. In his early years, he was a teenager standing strong with other young people at the Canberra Tent Embassy in 72, was in the protests for the 82 Commonwealth Games, where they were met with police violence again. Tiger went on to set up Radio Redfern and 4AAA in Brisbane, always creating a space on the airways for First Nations perspectives, music and voices of his people.
now, all right, we've got the Prime Minister has flown the flag. The flag's up. A treaty is what's needed. Do they realise a treaty means compensation for lands lost, compensation for injustices and oppression suffered by Aboriginal people? Do they realise that a treaty means national land rights legislation? When we have here in New South Wales, the Premier doesn't want to abolish legislation altogether, and we've got the Prime Minister now talking about a treaty. A lot of Aboriginal people, most Aboriginal people, will see a treaty meaning these things. That's the Aboriginal perspective. The Aboriginal interpretation of a treaty is, yes, compensation, national land rights, and a number of other things. An Anglo-Saxon, a non-Aboriginal person's interpretation of a treaty is a handshake after a fight. Yep. There's two big differences. Yep. And there's going to be problems in trying to negotiate on down to one acceptable level or an acceptable proposal or a base to start working from. Terms of reference, a lot of negotiations, a lot of consultation. And once again, Aboriginal people have to be in control, I think, of the consultative process. Don't do another ATSIC commission job on us. We've got to do this properly ourselves. And let us work to our agenda and let us work to our time frame. Don't have these things imposed upon us, because it can inhibit thinking, and you come up with something that's just not acceptable. It's 1988. They're celebrating their 200th anniversary. In 200 years, there has been no reconciliation between the Indigenous people and the invaders of this country. They established this country on terra nullius. It's shaky foundations. If you're building a house, you want firm foundations under it, otherwise you're going to prop the bugger up for the next 15 or 20 years. That's what's happening in this country today.
And it was strange when the haze in which we was raised did abandon me. The way I broke free, you understand, believe, their chains no longer got a hold on me. Yet again, when I look out to sea, no hope. Heart broke when they killed the trees, can't cope, I start to choke. I mean, it's hard to breathe, I'm gonna need some water, like Blue King Brown, cause daddy raised me to be the daughter that'd bring buildings down. And even when I am succeeding, still it seems I'm bleeding, cause my people are needy.
There's no price on my land.
And even when I am succeeding, still it seems I'm bleeding, cause my people are needy.
You cannot buy my soul.
War, the enemy of peace. Rich fights, being fought by the poor on distant streets. But not so distant shores felt the force of first fleets. The pox was not so small, my people's decrease. Defending us and our law against the dehumanising beast. And where now is our monument, recognition of this feat, our dues? You may have died for this country, but my people did too, and still do. War unannounced, still not put in the history. Rape and murder on many accounts, the truth of our mass is still a mystery. Feeling the effects in misdirection, this infection purely clear. You might be fighting wars on other shores, but still there's war carried out here. 2013, a bad dream for a poor righteous seer. The Australian army troops sent in again, but no, not to fight and not to defend, not to fix up, but just to condemn. While the rest of white society continues to commend. 10 years more of war extend. Cause having a fair go means having fair skin, white brains and white friends. The Great Australian Division. No day of recognition. No land for us to live in or carry out our own traditions. So can you stand the likes of war? Can you love? Can you adore? A war against culture, equality and peace. A human rights law is out of play and incomplete. So there's a human rights war being fought on Aussie streets. War. Yes, the enemy of peace.
So that's only a glimpse into the lives of two generations of First Nations storytellers. Today, the future looks bright for the Bales-Watson line of storytellers and the ancient art form. The younger ones are running with the powerful messages of their elders and making it their own in many ways. Meet Teela Watson, Ross Watson's daughter.
So, Arnie, can you tell us what exactly inspired you to start writing, start telling your stories?
I think family, really. I think we've always been raised to be expressive. We've always been very aware of thinking and thinking out loud in a way. And you know, we've always been surrounded by political discussion and artistic discussion as well. Aunty Maureen had a big impact on me, and still I'm still very inspired by her work. Aunty Lilla, of course, Dad as well. And it's like a nice thing to sing, you know. So I got into love songs, and I sort of went full circle in a way, and I come back and I just want to sing about the trees and having fresh air. So, yeah, it was just this natural thing where we'd all be sitting around the fire, and all of a sudden you'd hear all these stories about growing up in the bush and being on granny's country and being these little Murray kids in central Queensland in the 30s and 40s and 50s. So I think that kind of stuff as well was always really just a magic sort of thing that just happened naturally. But it was really valuable as well, yeah.
What's the importance, do you think, of storytelling today especially?
The interesting thing and the deadly thing about storytelling is that quite often with Murrays as well, because it's such a part of our culture, and that part of our culture predates colonialism by so long. You know, it's like a tool that we've kept. The role of the storyteller, in a sense, is to tie us to our history and to bring that history into the present, because we are living history, and we bring the past into the present just by being. But having the stories passed down, it is tying us back, you know, like that thing about sitting around the fire and hearing about Dad and the aunties and uncles growing up in Theodore. That act of tying us to that period in time when they were children, that's something that's always happened for our people. So I think that's kind of, for me, in a cultural sense, it's a sacred thing, because it gives us our connection. You know, I remember being really young and not remembering what Theodore looked like, and not remembering what the Dawson River looked like, and not even remembering what yellow bellies looked like. But I knew that story about Dad catching that yellow belly, and I knew that I could go back to that river and I could catch a yellow belly, and I knew that I belonged on that country. You know, growing up in the city away from country and not necessarily having that connection. So then when I did go back to country to see our Briglow trees and to swim in the Dawson River that I've been hearing about my whole life, and I was swimming in that same river that my dad swam in when he was, you know, a little boy, and I was catching fish. So it was like I was a part of this story. Storytelling helps to tell us where we belong and that we belong. I think one of the main reasons I started practicing art and writing and stuff like that is because in this society, I mean, we are living in what is essentially an illegally occupied country. And so there's not many ways that we can actively exercise our sovereignty in a full way, what we might believe freedom to mean. So when we have art, it's like we have this opportunity to have self-determination and experience what it is like to be self-determining. And I think without art, it would be a very different experience being, it would be like being trapped in only colonialism.
That was a song passed down from my great-great-grandmother. A lullaby which we are sharing with you now for the first time publicly. We're sitting here with my great-grandmother's sister, my mother and her aunties, yarning about the importance of traditional knowledge systems, storytelling and family community. We talk about the importance of the young ones carrying it on. My mum, Lagani Teela, writes poetry, raps, writes songs and is involved in the struggle for a better tomorrow for First Nations communities, just as the generations before her. Kai Bowles, or Mum, has spent years alongside her grandmother Maureen and father Tiger at rallies, conferences, events, workshops and many discussions around the kitchen table. You can hear her teachings of her elders all through her work.
Dedicated to the sufferers of invasions, their experiences are a direct result of systems gone wrong from the beginning. Who feels it the most? The disadvantaged. Even though they don't engage in it in any way, they experience the brink of the rapes, the violence, the murders, the drugs, degradation, and overall disregard of one of the most greatest treasures of all time, humankind, humankind, humankind.
Lastly, meet the baby of the upcoming storytellers, again making the messages she carries her own, but echoing lessons passed down from her elders. Gayala, Tiger's granddaughter, is already speaking up at rallies, taking the mic without hesitation as a teenager to voice her concerns, hopes, and fears for her people and her country.
What kind of country do
do you want to live in the future?
I want to live in a clean, healthy and smart country. A country that knows how our planet works, knows that, you know, we can't be damaging this country. We've got to look after it. I think the government and the whole system needs to look at, you know, what those native people, how they took care of country before, you know, settlers arrived. They need to look at how we ran this country. They need to look at how we used to take care of this country, because then that's when they'll find their answer. That's when this country will become better. And that's when our children and my children's children, that's when I'll know that they can actually live in a safe and healthy environment. Because at the moment, you know, building all these cities, buildings, using so much petrol and all that that goes to run this world, is at the end of the day, it's not gonna help us live. It's not gonna make this country strive for better. It's just gonna take it all down. And you know, people need to realize that buildings and, you know, your big cars that you drive around and houses and, you know, how much money you spend in even, or all of that, it's nothing. If you're not looking after your country, then what's going to happen to you? What's going to happen to your children? What's going to happen to all your family? You know, you've really got to look at how you've got to take care of this country and how we've got to look after it, because this is all we've got. And people got to understand how serious it is, because I don't think people understand, you know, how serious global warming is even. So yeah, we just really need to look in how the native people used to run this country, because that's how we lived in perfect harmony, and that's how we should live in perfect harmony. So, yeah.
Perfect. What do you think it's going to take for that kind of change to happen?
It's going to take a lot of voices, a lot of speaking, a lot of standing up, a lot of people to really get their message across there. But even that, you know, that's not working. We've been talking about how to take care of country for hundreds of years. The settlers could see how perfect our country was, which is why they moved here. And now that they've, you know, built all their cities and everything's all done, everything's going all wrong. And a lot of people can see that. And I think not only would it take voices, but it needs to take action. People need to start doing something about it, because we need to start realising that it is a serious thing. We need to start living in a healthy and safe environment in order for our generation to go on, in order for us to live. I think that it's important that we not only speak about it, but we speak about it to our children and our children's children. It doesn't matter how young they are. And that's why I write my poems, to be an inspiration to the younger generation and to get my message across. So I think, you know, I don't want to get into, you know, violence or anything, you know, when you go to the marches and people are yelling about global warming and how serious it is. I don't think that's the way to go about it. I think the way, although people are so angry about, you know, trying to look after the country, I think the right way would be to educate people about how to look after our country, and to educate and to listen to your elders about how to educate and to take care of this country, so you can tell your children, so you can tell all your friends, everyone, you know, because it really needs to be, you know, we need to look after this country. It's all we've got. It's this day that our people and culture have survived and will continue to survive as I raise my hand up high with pride. We do not call it Australia Day. Why should we? And why would you celebrate a day we mourn, a day so torn, a day this country was reborn, but not in our hands, you see? What we had is gone, but not lost. We still hold on to our language, practicing our songs and dances. But you stole our land, which we ran in perfect harmony. It provided for us as we provided for it. And if we want it back, it comes to a cost that's so ridiculous. How dare you celebrate the oldest living race was murdered, raped, taken away, and put to work without no pay? Would you celebrate a day your family died fighting for their land? I just don't understand how they could celebrate a day full of genocide. It's just not right. Yet we still continue to survive. Mind you, not the full extent of life that we would like to. As my people die at an early age, my heart is filled with such rage because if it wasn't for this day that the invaders brought their diseases and sicknesses, drugs, alcohol and food that was not meant for our digestive system, then I know for a fact we wouldn't have addictions and die so young in your hospitals and prison systems. No, I will not celebrate your Australia Day. Instead, I'll remember my honourable ancestors on Survival Day because we have survived their attempt at genocide. And here we are, still standing strong with our heads held high. No, we won't go away. We won't lay down and die. We will continue to fight for our rights because we have survived. Let's yet achieve. Though alone, stressed we grieve. This is still our home. Blessed it bleeds because they're killing our seeds. Killing kids that haven't lived or even been conceived. Because they're killing the trees. Filling the water with disease. Poison our own sweet dreams with unsustainable means. What it all means. We need to get back to what it was our ancestors believed. And that's just what I believe.
This land. Look out. This dynamic family and the many generations to come. Weaving the stories. Teaching the ancient lessons of wisdom from our country. One story, poem, speech, interview, song, runway walk at a time. We pay tribute to this long line of pioneers in so many areas of their lives, the Bales Watson mob, past, present, future. Brought to you by Mother and Son Team, Caillou and Tiger Bales. Put an end to this illegal occupation of a nation. Stop rations, listen, be patient. Kicking off the heads of our next generation and still the victims of corporate racism. We the key ingredient. All this talk.
This Future was produced with the assistance of Brisbane Indigenous Media Association, 98.9 FM for the Community Radio Network, with financial assistance from the Community Broadcasting Foundation.
Rise up, rise up, rise up. Sovereign people still today, for our old ways, for a new day. Time to thrive because we have survived even modern day genocide, colonisation.
Four Generations of Black Storytellers was brought to you as part of the 2017 CBAA National Features and Documentary Series. If you'd like to listen again or explore related videos, news clippings and archive material, visit nfds.org.au. Thanks to the CBAA for letting us play this piece.
You keep on smiling and thriving on your Aboriginal island.
All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney, in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producers are Selena Shannon and Beck Fari. Our community coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Beth Gibson is our SYN production manager. Tegan Nichols compiles our show. And I'm your host, Samantha Groff. Our artwork is designed by Annie Hamilton, and our theme music is composed by Shining Bird. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and did you know you can find all our archives, that means all our previous episodes, at allthebestradio.com. We'd love you to subscribe too, please, and leave us a review on your favourite podcast app.